Welcome to the UK Investor Magazine podcast, the latest on shares, markets and investments, now available on your Amazon Alexa.
Hello and welcome to the UK Investor Magazine podcast, now also available on the UK Investor Magazine mobile app. For today's podcast, we're going to be taking a deep dive into a company that's disrupting the $4 billion animal health market. It's a company that's currently raising funds on Republic. We're going to be discussing the markets that they are moving into from their existing operations. We're going to be discussing their future growth plans, as well as the current growth plan and trajectory. And to do that, we're very kindly joined today by Douglas Dundonald, who is the CEO and founder of the company Theros. Douglas, thank you very much for being on the podcast today.
Jonathan, thank you very much. Looking forward to it.
Yes, really looking forward to it. A really interesting area that you're operating in, and you've already gained quite significant traction, which we're going to be discussing, but you've also got some really exciting growth plans. So before we get into it, Douglas, for people that may not be aware, please could you give us an introduction, first of all, to yourself as well as Theros, please?
With pleasure. So Theros was founded actually back in December 2016 by myself and my two co-founding scientists, Rosemary Waring and Professor John Hunter. John recently retired as head of gastroenterology at Addenbrooke's Cambridge, probably one of the most published gut health experts globally. And Rosemary is a toxicologist based at Birmingham. I have been a deep tech entrepreneur for almost 30 years, mostly doing work in the life science space and the security and resilience space. And Rosemary contacted me. We've known each other for quite a long time before we founded the company, to explain that she and John were working in horses and had really discovered something pretty interesting, which they thought would displace prebiotics and in the animal health space. So that's where we started. We had already had a strong interest in the space, having co-founded and built a business out of Manchester, the work of Shaheen Handy and for Dysphagia, which is called Phagenesis. That is currently gaining huge traction in the US market, having closed almost $100 million worth of funding. And that is a cure for dysphagia, which is an inability to swallow after stroke or brain injury, or indeed some of the neurodegenerative diseases. So strong interest in gut health. We got kicked off, as I said, in 2016. John and Rosemary had done a lot of work in horses. John had a friendship with Luca Cavani. Luca, at that stage, was one of the top flat racing trainers in the UK. He had had problems with his horses. The vets couldn't fix them. So John was challenged by Luca as a clinician to see if he could fix them. And the rest really is history. And I can tell you quite a lot more about how that evolved. But we spent up until about almost 4 years ago continuing to do the R&D side and really started commercial traction on this business about just over 3 years ago. But in essence, Luca's yard, about 20% of his horses were not in good condition. He knew it was gut related. The vets couldn't fix it. Rosemary's husband, now late husband, Dennis Briggs, who's one of the world authorities on barley and particularly for malted barley for the distilling and brewing industry, suggested using a particular type of extract, enzyme-rich malt extract, and that contains all the necessary enzymes to help break down a starch overload. Racehorses are fed a very heavy carbohydrate diet when they're actually designed to just grass forage, mostly rough grass, for over sort of 24/7. And the enzyme-rich malt extract has a huge amount of amylase that breaks down the carbohydrates. You don't get any of the toxicity problems in the hindgut. Anyway, after 8 weeks of trying this with Lucas horses, eight horses that were put into the cohort to trial worked out perfectly. When we were introduced to Luca before we started the business, we asked him how he was doing with his horses, and he said, well, you know, we're doing really well. We then looked at his data and took us about a few months to dig it out. It's all public domain data because it's all published racing data. And his horses basically doubled their winnings and quadrupled his prize money over a three-year period. And the only change in his yard practice was the introduction of what we now call Equinectar. So that's the sort of background and history and my co-founding sort of partners in this.
I think I'd like to start with the technology, and you have touched on it in your introduction, but there's probiotics, which people may be familiar with, but you're taking a different approach in your technology, which I actually believe has a patent in anabiotic nutrition. For people that may not be aware of the area, maybe hearing about it for the first time, could you please break down that, you know, the differences there and what it means for you as a company?
Yes, I mean, probiotics and prebiotics have been around for an awfully long time. And prebiotics is basically, you know, thinking about the human side, is essentially eating sensibly and the right sort of foods. And, you know, there's a lot of people providing quite a lot of advice about that these days, certainly in the human health side. With probiotics, you're introducing a strain or a bunch of strains of bacteria into your gut in order to assist the gut function. The problem is that they just wash out within 24 hours. And there is no statistically significant data on probiotics globally in any animal or indeed human that demonstrates that you can make a significant impact on a health condition using probiotics. Now, that will probably change as we understand more about our own genetic makeup and our individual genetic makeup of our bacteria in ourselves and other animals. It's described as personalized medicine. But right now, what might be good for you, Jonathan, if I was to give you a bunch of probiotics, might not be good for me, and certainly very unlikely to be very good for somebody, you know, who is Indian and China, living in a completely different environment and having a very a different diet. Their microbiome is going to be very different to yours and mine. So there isn't really a one-size-fits-all policy here. So our approach, anabionics, which is, you know, derived from the Greek, basically restoring your own gut, which is provide the necessary tools for the restoration, the self-restoration of your own bacteria in your gut. And so enzyme-rich malt extract is made up of at least 8 different enzymes. It's in a multidextrin matrix, which allows it to get through the stomach. Stomach sits at about 2 pH, so it's very acidic. Gets it into the small intestine, where particularly when we started the business, it was really all about amylase and starch. But actually, it's everything. So it's proteins and starch. In the case of horses and other animals, particularly horses, obviously you're trying to break down grasses as well. So we have cellulases in there. We've got phytase, which is very good for animal well-being. All of that helps basically break down the food intake, and particularly if the animal has been fed a carbohydrate-heavy diet. That then means that you don't get a sort of toxic overspill into the hindgut. And in the case of horses and indeed other animals, in the colon, the gut, you get what's called leaky gut, and those toxins can then across the gut wall and get into the bloodstream. And then you get all sorts of other problems. And, you know, general health, you know, for human, dog, horse, is all basically driven out of good, solid gut health. So all we're doing is introducing something which assists your own gut bacteria to do the job that they were designed to do.
Of course, Tharos started in the equine market, and we'll move on a little bit later on the podcast to discuss some of your traction there. But one of the key elements of your growth strategy, I understand, Douglas, is moving into the dog canine supplement area. How are you going to convince dog owners to move from what they already know in the supplements that they may already be using over to Tharos's solution? And how would that be different to the early traction that you made in the equine markets?
So I think it's important to understand that we're very much a science focused business. We've got 4 patent families, and we've got 2 patents granted, one in the States and one here in the UK. We've done over 14 different studies in both equine and canine over a number of years. A number of those have been published in some, peer-reviewed journals, starting out initially with the work that John and Rosemary did, which was published in one of the British publications back in 2014, before the company was founded. So there's over a decade of research work in here, all of which is available on our website. So we're science-led, first and foremost, and I think that's important for people to understand. And on the dog side, we've been running trials with quite a number of people. I mean, we started with dogs for medical detection. We then moved on. We've had a almost 3-year longitudinal trial with UK Border Forces dogs. I can't tell you which location, but we've had incredibly good results with them. So that's working dogs. A lot of the work we've done on horses has been with working animals. So initially started in racehorses. That's migrated completely out of the racing market. You know, we've worked with the British Army. We've done that for, over 3 years. Household cavalry, all the horses use our product there. So we've got a very solid backing. IBC Evidentia onboarded us over 4 years ago. They're the largest veterinary group in the UK. Their clinical committee onboarded us. 40% of our equine references, referrals come from vets. We get a lot of calls now from vets asking us to help them understand gut health. Gut health is a relatively new science. It's only been really taught in veterinary colleges for the last maybe 5 or 6 years. So people who are graduated from veterinary over 10 years ago, actually they're catching up. And going to your specific question about dogs, I mean, we've got ongoing studies, but in order to enter the canine market, which we've only just started to do, we took the approach of reaching out to experts. There are 28,000 dog professionals here in the UK, just as a sort of starting point. And they run from dog behaviouralists right the way down to dog groomers. So rather than challenge the market, we wanted to, because we work very closely with veterinary in the equine space, you want the professionals in that space to work with you. So we've been running for the last 2 months, and we're going to continue to run this, a trial with those dog professionals to see how they like the product. And the partnership is the trial is twofold. On the one side, it's for us to be able to gather data on things which matter to dog owners. Does stool improve? Does skin condition improve? Is the dog more or less anxious? These things, and particularly the anxiety issue, this gut-brain axis is really important for animal owners, as it is indeed for human. And gut-brain axis is now very well understood, increasingly well understood in the clinical space and also in the veterinary space. So we've had some amazing results. So we've been running this. We have had basically every dog with an anxiety issue, and we've recruited over 100 dogs so far and over 100 dog professionals. And that's rolling out at around about, we're acquiring about 50 a month at the moment. But most importantly, not only have we had amazing feedback, and that data is something that we can publish and build on, but also we're recruiting these dog professionals as resellers and affiliates. So about 20% of those who've been going through trial have put their hand up and are signed up as affiliates and effectively referral agents. They've all got social media content themselves. I think what we're going to build very quickly over the course of this year as we enter the market is hundreds of product advocates at the very least. And 20% of those parties who've joined us will become resellers and affiliates. And that's really exciting for us. So we don't have to spend a ton of money on people like Meta advertising. What we're doing is we're basically engaging the professional market. And I think it's that is going to convince dog owners around the country that they should be using Caninecta, and they'll see the results for themselves.
It seems like it's a similar model with the equine and the canine. Obviously, with the equine, starting off with the professionals, the vets, and it seems like it's a similar story for canine in the early stages. Can you see this being a mass market product where somebody could go into their local pet store and see it on the shelves in the future? Is that where you aspire to be?
Yeah, so initially it's a D2C business, so direct to consumer. It's much easier to recruit serious retailers who want to stock things on their shelves once you've actually got a lot of customers sitting near their particular store. That's a much easier conversation to have. We believe that in the dog sector in the UK, and we are basically running this in the UK only, the intention is to take this straight to America. We've got a B2B side which is growing in Europe on the equine side, particularly in Eastern Europe and Scandinavia. And we'd probably piggyback on that for the canine side, as opposed to going to D2C. We will go D2C also in America, but also through all the professionals. So we are already now beginning to do work on understanding who the partnerships we'll need to build in America once we've got ourselves well established in the canine space here in the UK. In terms of sizing, I mean, the equine market, we think we can grow this easily over the next 3 to 4 years in Europe and North America into a, you know, $8 to $10 million dollar revenue business. Nice, good, solid business, decent margins. Anybody investing in this business, you know, is not going to lose their shirt. The canine business is going to be worth at least 10x that. And if we can get product advocacy of at the scale that we expect to be able to manage and build that business model successfully here in the UK, and then use that model to basically run that out in the US. And, you know, if you think we've got, you know, almost 30,000 people in the, you know, dog professionals here in America, there's at least 10 times that in the US. And of course, the US is significantly wealthier than the UK. And therefore, market adoption using those professional channels will be way faster because they're much more commercial. So, you know, this has the potential, you know, not in the next 3 years, but we have the potential to build a revenue business in excess of $100 million a year.
Fantastic. And I would use this opportunity to note, anybody listening would like to know some more about Tharos, do check out the notes to this podcast, because there'll be a link through to their page on Republic where you'll be able to get further information, including the investment pitch deck, which will definitely be worth having a look on. Going back to the equine side of the business, Douglas, of course, you've got an established business there. But you're not resting on your laurels, I understand. You have new products in the pipeline, is that correct?
Equinector works on the hindgut, but lots of horse owners have problems with foregut. So we don't have a patented approach to this, but there's some extremely well-published science in this space, and we've just completed formulation and testing for two new foregut products. They're going to get launched by the end of June. We've set up packing operations, mixing and packing operations, actually with our QC team, who are based up in the Northeast in County Durham. And we're going to grow that side. So we'll basically be able to add, you know, we think somewhere between 30 and 50% of our current revenue through those new foregut product sales to our existing customer base. And they're all at good margins. You know, the sort of margins that we would expect in equine, you know, sit around about the 60%. And canine sits significantly higher. That's sort of 80 to 90%, depending on which channels you're selling through. So in retail, of course, you've got to take into consideration there's probably a wholesaler in the middle of that, and you've then obviously got the retailer margin. So that takes our margins down to probably 60% in those channels. Hence us wanting to go and start to own the relationship with the customer D2C, and then we'll break ourselves into other retail opportunities. And the other thing is worthwhile noting, Jonathan, is that we've had a few knocks on the door, and we're going to do a lot more work on this year, is, you know, should we be considering white label products with some of the bigger companies globally? So, for instance, Southeast Asia, which is an enormous market opportunity for dogs, almost now bigger and growing faster than the American market. Should we enter that market directly ourselves, or should we be finding a partnership and doing a white label deal? There are many opportunities, either through some of our Australian friends who have a fantastic platform to go into Southeast Asia, or indeed some of the, you know, very fast growing parties in this space. I mean, both Thailand and Vietnam, as an example, have some extremely good, very innovative, dog-focused businesses out there. And, you know, forming partnerships out there early is definitely something that we want to strategically look at later this year.
So you mentioned there, Douglas, some of the other players in the industry. What does the landscape look like for Tharos? I mean, who are you up against, and how are you protected against some of these competitors that may see what you're doing and like to get involved?
I mean, starting with the really big boys, Nestle, Purina and Mars are the dominant players globally. And that's not just for food, that's also for supplements. Increasingly, they've been acquiring supplements businesses, particularly in the companion animal space. People probably don't realise, actually, the companion animal space for both Mars and Nestle is their biggest part of their business. And particularly for Nestle, it's a huge part of their business. So those are the big guys. Then you've got, you know, quite a lot of other players here in the UK, you know, great company, Associated British Foods. They own the equine distribution business called NAF, and they're, you know, they're a very big player in the equine space, but they sell all sorts of products through that channel. And there are a number of other players across Europe, many, and across North America as well. The difference is nearly all of those parties, if they're offering a supplement, it's usually or almost exclusively a probiotic of one sort or another. And our approach is completely different. We really are in white space here. Nobody else has actually conceived of using this particular malt extract in the way that it's being used. I mean, this malt extract's been around for a long time. It's difficult to manufacture, and there are only probably two parties globally who can make it. It's made under vacuum and at low temperature, otherwise you denature the very enzymes that you want to contain. So we're confident that we've got, you know, we've got a good lockout, we've got a good commercial moat, and also people who are in the probiotic space, very difficult to make that switch. If you've invested in that brand, that messaging, and everything about prebiotics, actually quite difficult to switch to something which is very different. And we're complementary, so we're not competitive. We think we'll take some market share, but we don't need to take very much market share. And 1% of, you know, the current market opportunity in companion and equine, you know, is almost you know, £30 million a year revenues. So, you know, we're not going to, I don't think we're going to upset anybody by taking that sort of market share, and we can grow from there.
You touched on the manufacturing side of things. Question here about, I mean, what does that look like at the moment?
We've had a partnership, British company, family controlled. They, Muntins PLC, they have been around for about 150 years. Maltsters tend to be very traditionally run businesses. They essentially provide, their main customers are people like Diageo on the sort of spirits and beer side. And then, you know, on the food side, it tends to be people like, you know, Weetabix and, you know, Kellogg's. It's sort of, so those are their customer base. And then they're doing quite a lot of stuff for craft brewers and the likes of that. But very solid. And that huge black box, you know, that knowledge and know-how of actually how to manufacture a product like this, which is not easy to manufacture.
What does it look like as it scales, Douglas? Do you think you're going to be able to rely on that partner?
Yeah, so there is one other maltster, and, you know, as we grow, in order to be able to, you know, de-risk to that side of the business, we will certainly look to dual source, and we've had early discussions about how to do that. We will probably take some of our blending in-house. As I said, we've got a team up in the northeast of England, and we'll probably grow that so that we can actually blend and mix some of our own products. In the US market, we've already had conversations. Currently, there is no product like this available in the US. Can we make it in the US? Yes, we've spoken to some of the larger maltsters already. We know, you know, the R&D directors of a couple of them. The issue will be volume. It always is for America. So, you know, they won't get out of bed until we get our volume to a particular level in the US. I think we'll probably reach that volume in about 3 years' time. And we'll probably start that conversation in about a year's time with potential US supply chains. The grains are just, you know, for people who are at all interested in agronomy, are ancient barley grains. They're much older varieties. They're non-GM. And the yield on them is lower. So they command a premium. Generally speaking, these types of grains are not grown in the US, but they are grown in Canada. So we'd almost certainly work with one of the maltsters near Chicago and probably import the grain across the border from Canada.
Let's move on now to an area I'm sure anybody considering investing in Tharros is going to be particularly interested. That's the numbers. You have actually provided quite a comprehensive breakdown of some of your margins on the products so far, Douglas. But I'd like to look at the revenue, where you are now, where you'd like to be, and how the current Republic round is going to get you there.
Last year, we did just under £750,000 in equine. No canine sales in that. We think we'll grow that to closer to, you know, double that over the course of this year, particularly as canine starts to kick in. And as I said, we're really focused on that and focused on UK only at the moment because we've got to prove out that model. So this round is about giving us enough cash to be able to do that, do some follow-on studies. We formed a partnership with Nottingham Vet School. We're doing a dog bloating study there at the moment. We've got other things we'd like to go and do. I mean, studies in animals are not at all the same in terms of cost base to, you know, clinical studies. So it's relatively cheap to do, and it's really important to get, you know, a series of publications through. We've been working very closely with animal charities here in the UK. As I said, you know, we started our dog work with Dogs for Medical Detection. We've been working with Blue Cross. We're working with all these other dog professionals. So essentially, the cash raise will drive a number of things. For us, it'll be continuing to expand our equine, our B2B business in Europe, and it will also continue to grow our D2C equine business. But really, it's to firmly put our foot on the pedal for building our canine business here in the UK and starting to enter the US market. We've just organized a cheaper way of transporting our equine product to the US, which will allow us to get a smaller, lower cost unit into the sales channel in the US. That will allow us to also start to push the equine market in the US. Now, all of that, as you can imagine, requires, you know, cash. Is it crazy? Can you scale businesses without hiring lots of people? We haven't touched on AI, but I personally and the people I've been working with have been using AI for 20 years, so mostly machine learning tools. But we've been using AI, obviously, to dissect our data sets. You know, that was usually done by statisticians in the past. We now do all that ourselves. And in terms of utilizing those tools for market access, we are brutally using those. And I don't think there are that many people in this space who are doing that. So we are building agents at the moment so that we can essentially scale this business with actually probably not having to hire an awful lot more people. They have to be very smart, well-engaged people, and we will definitely be growing our team. But, you know, 3 years or 4 years ago, you'd have to grow your team quite significantly to be able to hit the revenue numbers. We don't have to grow the team in the same way. You can completely rethink the way you can scale a business these days.
Very interesting point that you make there. You know, years ago, you know, the scaling would have come with significant costs, but with the technology that's available to you, and it sounds like that you're harnessing it in a particularly interesting way for your business.
Yeah, I mean, anybody who's interested in hearing more about that, I'd be delighted to talk to them because, you know, we're actually very excited about what we can do. And I think we're being quite innovative without going into it in any more detail.
Yeah, I mean, it's actually really interesting that you mentioned it at the end there, because I mean, I'm sure some people would have dropped that in at the beginning. But, you know, a great product there, you've got the traction. But actually, the efficiencies that it sounds like you've got within the business by deploying AI is actually making that investment case a little bit more compelling. And you have really outlined quite a compelling case there for Tharos. So as I've said earlier, if anybody would like to find out more, do check out the notes to this podcast, because there'll be a link through to Tharos's page on Republic. So to finish off now, Douglas, looking, you know, over the next year to 3 years, what would you point investors to as key milestones that you're working towards? And if anybody wants to get involved, what should they do?
So in terms of getting involved, we'd love to have them on board as investors. Obviously, very happy to take calls, give further information, certainly go through the Republic website. But, you know, we can be contacted directly as well. So, you know, please do reach out, do contact us. I've got a really good team. We can talk to the team. And our number one milestone is proving out this engine we're talking about for rolling out Caninectum. So utilizing dog professionals to onboarding them, not only so that they believe in the product and therefore will recommend it on their social channels, but what I want to prove out is that the 20% that we've converted into either resellers or affiliates, okay, how does that scale? Does each one of those affiliates sell 3, 5, 10, 20,000 pounds worth of product? What does that look like? So we've got a model. We've put in some fairly cautious predictions into that model. My number one challenge is to prove that model, you know, and vary it as you need to learn from it. And that's going to take us probably 6 to 9 months here in the UK. As soon as we've done that, and we will be starting in the US now, because my experience of the US is US investors, US customers like to see US data. And what we will do is we'll do exactly the same as we're doing here in the UK. We'll go probably veterinary initially in the US so that we've got really good data on the canine side, which has been formulated and collated in the US. And then we will stand on the shoulders of that data to basically build out an identical business model to the one we should have honed quite well over the course of the next 6 to 9 months here in the UK and build that out in the US.
Fantastic, Douglas. So for the final time, anybody who would like to know more, do check out the notes to this podcast. There'll be a link through to Tharos' page on Republic. So Douglas, thank you very much for being with us today.
Jonathan, thanks very much. And I look forward to some of your readers and listeners getting in contact with us and investing through Republic. Many thanks.
Likewise, and thank you very much to everyone for listening. Thank you.
We hope you enjoyed listening to the UK Investor Magazine podcast. Please do share the podcast, and we really value any reviews and comments you leave us in your chosen podcast player. The views presented by the hosts and guests of the UK Investor Magazine podcast are in no way investment advice, and please remember all investment involves risk.